Welcome to Australia's Fiercely Independent Property Podcast.
Residential property is the only asset class we live in. It is where we raise our families, and it's our most expensive investment, yet property advice remains unregulated.
Listen to three pioneers of the property industry, each with diverse areas of expertise in property planning, buying, and education.
We'll distill the raw truth from the ill-informed.
Join the property planner, David Johnston, the property buyer, Kate Bakos.
That's me.
And the property professor, Peter Kalizos, as we take you on a journey through the maze of property, mortgage and money decisions to empower you to create your ideal lifestyle.
Hello and welcome everyone to the Property Planner, Buyer and Professor podcast. It's lovely to have your company again and also the company of my two great co-hosts, Dave Johnston and Kate Bakos. Dave, how are you going?
Going really well, Pete. It was a good weekend, bit of social, bit of kids' sport. Good to get them back at sport on the weekend, back at school. Life's getting back to normal again.
Kate, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm well, thanks, Pete. On the topic of kids, my lazy bones, nearly 16-year-olds back at school, and they've been calling for the kids to really think hard about what they're doing next year, subject selection for year 11 and careers sessions. And Miss Lazy Bones has not really been completely into it, and I was nagging her to get an appointment with the careers counsellor. Yeah, it'll happen. And I said, bub, this is only going to go one of two ways. You'll pick the right subjects, you'll study, you'll get into the course that you want, and you'll do something exciting, or come work for Mama and be a buyer's advocate. Well, she booked in her session yesterday, and it was great. I was so proud of her. She just does not want to be a buyer's agent.
Very good. Hey, a few days ago, I crossed the border into Victoria. Oh. My wife and I went on a little driving holiday. So we stopped off at Port Fairy for a night and then Beachport in South Australia for a couple of nights. Is there a prettier holiday place in Victoria other than Port Fairy?
It's beautiful. Oh. Yeah, it's magnificent.
Oh, the architecture, the houses, the buildings, even the natural environment, the river and the inlet. It's just beautiful. And, you know, I think next week we're talking about capital growth in cities versus regional areas. And we know how well regional areas have done. But, geez, like when we were walking down the main street, my wife was looking at all the knick-knack shops and the women's clothes, and I was looking at the real estate offices, of course. My God, the prices in those holiday areas anyway have gone up significantly. But I think it's a tale of a tale of two types of regional areas, because before I went on holiday, I was doing some research on Whyalla, which is an industrial city in South Australia, and you can still buy blocks of land there for, like, a 300-square-metre block of land you can buy for $40,000 or $50,000. But there is no way in the world that you could do that in Beachport, which is the same distance from Adelaide, on the water just like Whyalla, but obviously one's a favourite holiday spot and the other one is definitely not. So, listeners, keep an ear out for certainly next week. It'll be a little bit generic next week, but I'm very keen for the demographic data to come out through the ABS census, and I'm going to do a deep dive into trying to work out, is it all regional areas that have outperformed capital cities, or is it what I think the lifestyle areas, which is those close to the city, you know, driving distance to the city where people are also moving to retire or semi-retire. That deep dive episode won't happen until near the end of the year, because I think stats come out later than normal. Normally they come out in August, but I reckon they're coming out in October this year.
Yeah, they are.
They've teased us a little bit with some stats, but not the full set.
Look, it'd be remiss of us to go any further, Pete, without mentioning that Collingwood beat Adelaide on the weekend.
Right. You are on your first warning. Very first warning. You only get two.
Very good, Dave.
I will stay up and I will watch the soccer that you're filming and I will text you the score at 6 a.m. You are so naughty.
Soccer, it's football. That's AFL.
And we also won't mention Cameron Smith's great win in the British Open.
That was awesome,
thin
wasn't
ice.
It?
Fantastic. Very thin ice. You guys are ratbags.
Amazing back nine.
Right, moving forward.
What we're looking at today is what we said would happen in 2022, back in January. And we're going to revisit it and maybe update our predictions. But before we do that, do you have a quick market update?
Before we get into today's episode, take a listen to our weekly market update. Dave doesn't get one. He broke the rules.
Eight in a row for the Pies.
I do. I have a good market update. And it's,
go on, tell me, Kate. Tell
us. It's really about anyone out there who's thinking about working with a buyer's agent or, you know, or currently working with a BA. My best friend was very, very excited about buying a property. She always is. And, you know, nagged her broker silly until, yep, we're working on it. We've got your pre-approval sorted. We think we can, you know, spend circa $800. And texted me as soon as that pre-approval letter came through because I said no pre-approval, no searching. Anyway, we were able to put together a strategy. And the thing about working with a friend is obviously you'd like to think your friends completely trust you. I get clients that are repeat clients or they've listened to us on the podcast or they've been referred. And a lot of them are very, very trusting. I think, you know, natural, not skepticism, but wanting to inch into a relationship and work out where you sit and how you communicate is human nature. But every now and then you work with someone like your best friend and they don't even want to talk about things. They just completely trust you. Anyway, it did make for a very fast assignment, not because I was rushing it, because there were no barriers there where I had to explain things or soothe her nerves or do some of the things that you have to do for people that haven't experienced it before, because no buyer's agent can say, hey, I'm a BA, just trust me. Anyway, we shortlisted 8 properties, saw them, only had 2 remaining that we liked the look of. The following week, we scoured the market and picked out another 2 to go and see. And all in all, after 10 days with inspecting and shortlisting, we had 1 front runner and 1 very close plan B. And we nailed the front runner last night. That was a very, very fast assignment and a very successful one. I was able to negotiate hard, move quickly, get contracts reviewed, get building inspections done, all with a very fast yes from her because the trust was there. And I think my point of all of this is that when you're working with a professional, if you know their work and you do trust them, it can give you a really great outcome because they can move swiftly as well.
Thank you very much for that, Kate.
And congrats, Dave, you want to my buddies. One in?
Provide
great advice, Kate. So a couple of days after we recorded our market update and, you know, gave a bit of advice to Governor Lowe on what to do with rates, we saw unemployment drop from 3.8 or 3.9 unexpectedly, even further than was expected, down to 3.5%, which surprised the markets. And it has caused the economists now to expect rates to rise almost certainly by 0.5% this month or next month and possibly even 0.75% after I've spoken to him via our podcast about not going too hard too fast. Now, I think that still applies. I just think the likelihood of them only moving 25 basis points next month now is very low. There is one advertised job for every person who's unemployed at the moment. So we are very, very close to full employment, if not at full employment. And that's just going to actually continue to put pressure on inflation. And unfortunately, that's as the facts change, so does my opinion, as the saying goes. Yeah, I think I have to revise up where I think rates will go now. I was saying 2%. I think they're more likely to get up closer to 2.5%. I still think he should only move by 0.25, but I think it's probably pretty unlikely now with unemployment coming down to 3.5 since we recorded the market update.
Yeah.
We will see very, very shortly what happens there.
It's an interesting
stat. I've actually got a
small
market update. Sorry, Kate, you were saying?
Oh, the employment stats do concern me somewhat because you're absolutely right, Dave, for every unemployed person there's a job, but we've got a skills mismatch with available jobs versus your skills. And also underemployment. You know, we could chat to a lot of people that are classified as employed and they're not getting enough hours or, you know, really difficult conditions. So, you know, that does concern me. And if inflation does get really heady, we will start to see that figure change.
So I did a little bit of research late last week for Pippa. And so we'll come out with something probably in the next month once the June CPI figures come out. But you know how rents have gone crazy? And, you know, this talk about, oh, we need to limit how high rents can go or how much they're increased by. Well, I did a little bit of research. So listen to this. In the 10 years from March 2012 to March 22, the CPI increased by a total of 21.4%. In the 10 years from March 2012 to March 22, house rents increased only 18.8%. So all rents are doing is just playing catch up. So over the 10-year period, still rents have not been keeping up with CPI. Yeah. So all of those policymakers out there, I really hope that you do your research and analysis before you put something in writing or legislate it, because, yes, it seems that rents have gone up significantly, and they have in the last 2 years, but they did almost nothing for the previous 8 years. So the other reason I'm saying that is all the housing ministers met last Friday with the National Housing Minister, and they're going to be putting some proposals forward. So I just hope that they keep those things in mind. When you're looking to do something for the long term, you need to look back a long period of time to balance things out rather than some sort of knee-jerk reaction.
Yeah, very much so.
All right. Well, let's see what happens in that space over the next few weeks. All right, so predictions.
They're going to try and intervene, Pete. That's what's going to happen. And that is one of my predictions.
Well, they'll stuff it up.
Yeah.
Well, rental matters are state-based, so it'll be interesting to see what each particular state does.
We love hearing from our listeners, and we'd love to tackle more of your questions. So please, if you have any on your mind, no matter how great or small, send us a message. You can email us info@propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor, or go to our website, Facebook page, or simply click on the link in your podcast app under the play button and fill out our online form.
Predictions. Our first prediction was, what was the market going to do? So I said 2022 would see positive capital growth for capital cities and regional areas, but not as good as 2021. I think I got that right. Kate said, I think regional and capital cities will outperform for 2022, but she wasn't prepared to say it would be less than 2021, provided we don't see any shocks to the market. And we certainly did see some shocks, didn't we, Kate? One big one in particular.
Yeah, we did. And Dave actually alluded to this point. And I think at the time, you know, this exercise is a really good reflection on how our bias can creep in, because I'm a natural optimist and happy to wear that badge. And I've got a lot of things right in our past polls, but this time around, I don't think I'm winning at all out of the three of us. I got a lot of things wrong, and this was one of them. I saw the heady conditions that we experienced last year. I overlaid the fact that we'd have new arrivals and that we'd have a strong sense of rebounding and rebuilding, and people were happy to spend. We didn't see inflationary pressures getting to quite the level that they're at. We didn't envisage we were going to have as early a rate increase as we've had and in quick succession. But most of all, the supply chain issues and the impact of Russia's invasion of Ukraine has really bitten. So I was totally wrong. We've had, in a lot of our cities, a little bit of growth at the start of the year and it's tapered off. But for Melbourne, we've been static to slightly negative. So, yeah, I didn't get that one, Pete.
We need to say at the beginning, neither of us have a crystal ball. I'm not one that works anyway. So, you know, we couldn't see, even though Dave did mention something. Well, I certainly was hoping, probably more hoping, that we didn't have this Russian-Ukraine conflict, but that has certainly impacted on energy prices, which in turn impacts on inflation. It's also impacted on food crisis, on food prices. I was unaware how much of a food bowl the Ukraine is. So these world matters are certainly affecting what's happening here in Australia.
And that's the concern with rate rises, is they're actually not going to impact some of the international inflationary pressures.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they'll just drive markets down, both share and property markets.
And let's make note, we're only halfway through 2022. So
We're only halfway through. Dave, what do you think is going to happen for the rest of the year?
Well, for the rest of the year, I think we'll continue to see the reverse trajectory. And because Sydney and Melbourne are leading the way already in negative territory in the first 6 months, and they make up, give or take, 50% of all property sales, I think we'll probably end up in negative territory across the country. at the end of the year. So, you know, nationally, we're 2.2% growth for the first 6 months. So I could see that reversing to be minus 2.2% or more. So therefore, by the across the 12 months nationally, I think we'll be somewhere between 0 and 5% or might maybe hold just slightly above zero. But I think we're likely to move into slight negative territory for the 12-month period.
All right. Kate, what do you reckon?
Well, I think our markets broadly will be static all year. I'm not predicting a crash. I'm not really predicting, a bit of a downturn. First home buyers are definitely jittery, but the investors are already stepping up and they'll plug that gap. I think we'll see investors fill the void that first home buyers have left. And I think the top end will come off a little bit, and arguably some of those beautiful holiday locations, particularly in the southern states where we ran away to them if they were over, a 90-minute or even two-hour commute. I've got a few grave concerns for those, but I think the lower and middle quartiles will sustain, and I don't envisage really strong growth unless stock levels plummet. We have to think about what's driving investors to come back. It's all of those things that you were talking about at the start, Pete, in relation to increasing rents, tight vacancies, and also getting out of shares. They are opting out of shares because they're wanting to get into a stable asset class.
And crypto.
Okay. Very good.
which we know a lot of 20-somethings and 30s have got into.
Yeah.
And, diversified their cash savings into more so as well. So they're often, it's the first time buyers. And we've seen that anecdotally in our business who hold crypto more often. It's the younger cohort. Mm.
Yeah.
Just for the record, my prediction is that the market will continue to slow, and nationally, property prices will be lower at the end of the year compared to the beginning of the year. A bit like you, Dave, over the full 12-month period, we will be slightly negative, I think.
A lot of our predictions at the start of the year were pretty aligned too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was just me.
And just like,
it was out.
Just like capital cities.
What do you say, Kate? Pollyanna?
Okay, I'll take it.
So, Dave, you and I were pretty similar with which capital cities we thought were going to do best. I said Adelaide, Brisbane, Hobart and regional areas. You said Brisbane, Adelaide and also Perth. Kate, you said Melbourne, Hobart as well. You got that right. Brisbane, you got that right. And Canberra. So we got some right and some wrong.
Yeah. So the first 6 months of the year has seen Adelaide 10.8% leading the charge. Brisbane 9.1, and then it's a fair way back. You've got Canberra 4.6, Perth 4, Darwin 4, Hobart 2.6, Melbourne negative 1.7, Sydney negative 2.15.
I don't think you need to be a genius to work out. Like if Adelaide and Brisbane have done so well in the first 6 months and the other major capital cities have done so poorly, then probably over the 12-month period it'll be Brisbane and Adelaide that do well, because otherwise they're going to have to plummet in price to reach, the lows of Sydney and Melbourne.
And, and the two mining-related capital cities are holding on a bit better than the other capital cities in terms of their reverse of trajectory. So they might slip ahead of Canberra, but we'll see.
Regional locations, and we have our regional expert here with us, Kate, in particular regional Victoria.
Yeah.
Kate, you said ratio between houses and units, not a severe ratio in regions, but was in metro. For metro, the gap will close, units will come back, regional growth will continue in the significant regional cities.
Yep.
Not the tiny ones.
I maintain that, and, by tiny, I shouldn't use the word tiny, but anything that is a long way away from a centre that offers education, jobs, healthcare in particular, and also rail amenity or easy transport links to the majors, because while a lot of beautiful regions can sustain most people, as soon as you need specialist healthcare, it's not so exciting. So I do maintain that the regions that are within a 90-minute drive to major centres are the ones that have held up. And I've certainly been keeping an eye on the regions. That, as we knew from our market update session that we had last week when we were talking about the last locations to peak, the regions were later to peak than the capital city, so they partied on for longer and that they haven't had the falls.
Well, I said regional areas would outperform capital cities again, which is 3 years in a row.
Yeah.
Mainly due to the COVID-19 exodus and people looking for lifestyle, mainly because of the ability to work from home or spend more time working at home than pre-COVID. I've got that one right, but I've also, but I'm not sure if this is right. And what I'm saying is the lifestyle locations, that is the sea and tree change areas close to the capital cities, like you were saying, Kate, will continue to outperform capital cities. So when that demographic data comes out and I can match the demographic to the property data, and then by the end of the year, I'll do some analysis. I'm not going to analyse every regional area or rural area in Australia, but I will do a handful in each state. And one thing that we can look for, I mean, one indicator that I look for so far as holiday locations are concerned is look for the areas with the high proportion of unoccupied houses on census night. That gives you an indication what is a holiday area. But certainly regions have done very well. What have you seen in particular in Ballarat and Geelong, Kate? Still going strong there?
It's an interesting one, Pete. I was only having this conversation with someone yesterday. I had to start giving Ballarat a little bit of a wide berth because it was so hot. So hot that some of the reported data for days on market was 0 days. You look up a few suburbs in Ballarat and there are a few with 0 days on market, which means property hits itself. Crazy. I would bank up a nice itinerary. I'd lock it all in with the agents. I'd try and get a few pre-markets in there. So get myself through properties that the photographer hasn't been through yet. I'd get up there and the agent would have a handful of us to see through. Occasionally they give me first dibs and I go through without competition. But if they've had buyers nipping at their ankles wanting to see properties, they'll have a handful of people to go through before the photographer gets through. And as they're coming out, they're making offers. So how does that make me feel as an advocate who's trying to buy for value and always for an investor? It's a really hot market. So I focused a lot on Geelong because it wasn't happening to that degree in Geelong. And when I was weighing up the yields, the value for money, I was making that decision that I felt Geelong had better opportunity. But Ballarat has changed a little bit. The agents are calling now. There are properties that have had extended days on market. It certainly isn't crashing, but it hasn't got the same crazy uptake and buyer regression that it had. So it's definitely come off, and the agents are saying now they still don't have masses of stock, but it's not getting snapped up like it was.
Right. Very interesting. Thanks for that excellent insight, Kate. Right, investor numbers. Well, we all got this one right. We all said that investor numbers would increase in 2022. So in January, the proportion of investors in the market was 33.5%.
You didn't ask me any.
That's because you talked about sport. You used your time up.
That's right. Yeah.
Sorry, Dave. What do you reckon?
That's right. Well, look, I think the big question, the big macro question is, will migration to regions continue to be greater than from regions to capital cities, as has occurred over the COVID period? What if that trend sustains, then we're going to see continued outperformance from regional locations. If it mean reverts to what it historically has been, you know, greater migration from regions to capital cities, then I think what we're going to see is what historically has happened, you know, big macro picture regional locations and holiday locations, after they have a big run, they have a much longer hiatus on the sidelines and a much longer flat period.
It's not uncommon, some property, not so much in large regional areas, but small rural towns, to be on the market for years. I know that sounds extraordinary in this market, but I've spoken to a number of country agents. I've lived in the country myself, and it was not uncommon to see for sale real estate signs that had faded because they'd been there for so long, and the property was still on the market. It's not like somebody had forgot the sign there. Some people have short memories, but if you've been around long enough, you know the cycles, you know that certainly is possible.
Yeah, I think that's the big risk for regional locations, is they're going to have a sustained flat period. And as we've spoken about, the major capital cities tend to lead, just like the upper quartile leads within locations. It's similar, the upper quartile is Melbourne and Sydney in terms of values across the nation. They tend to lead the upturns and the downturns. And then the wave breaks across sort of the lower populated cities and then into the regions, which is why, as Kate said at the start of this little section, the regions have held on for longer, but it might mean that they take longer to recover on the way up. But if the trend of more people moving into the regions than into the cities continues, then that might not happen on this occasion. That's what we need to see.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Investor numbers, as I briefly said before, we all got that right. They have increased. So they were 33.5% of all buyers at the beginning of the year. Now they're 35.8%. Personally, I think they will continue to rise, mainly because yields are increasing because of those significant rent increases. So some people that might be invested in other markets, crypto, for example, if they've got any money left, they might want to be putting it somewhere else. And certainly property looks very attractive, even just from a yield perspective. Yes, we've had significant capital growth over the last 2 years, but now we're getting significant rent increases. What do you think, Kate?
Look, I think investors are most certainly back, and my litmus test is a pretty good one. It's actually my client book. And for the first time in a long time, I've sustained considerably more than 50% of my clients who are investors as opposed to owner ox. And I love both, but they're very, very different. And yes, it's been consistent. I've had people coming back, so repeat clients as well. And that resistance in relation to interest rate rises is very minimal compared to home buyers, and particularly first home buyers, because I think investors are looking at it objectively and saying, well, it's the cost of doing business and my rents are higher and my vacancy rates are tighter. So yeah, I don't foresee that changing unless APRA tinker with anything. And right now there's no talk about shutting out investors because we've got a rental shortage crisis.
Mm. Yeah, that's right. Most Australians do not own investment property. But what people need to understand is because it is generally a private rental market, most people live in rent out properties owned by the private sector, not the public sector. So if you want to try and alleviate this rental crisis, you either need to get government on board, right, who at the moment would own less than 10% of all rental properties, or you need to encourage more people to build more investment properties. And it's not going to happen overnight,
no.
But it's a supply issue. The key is it's a supply issue.
Yeah.
Supply of property takes a long time to come on.
Yeah. I think they'll stay broadly level, maybe slightly rise. It's not a number that moves rapidly. I mean, if we look at the start of the year, 33.54, and now it's sitting around 34.6, you know, 35. So, yeah, I think, yeah, slightly rise, but broadly
now, I think the advantage that the investor has in this current climate is even though interest rates are increasing, so is their rents. But for the poor old owner-occupier, it's just interest rates increasing. It's not like their wages are increasing significantly. Mm. Yeah. So investors are a step ahead at the moment.
Yeah, and we can't forget that the cost of interest is deductible.
Just a quick reminder, you can access our show notes, including links to all of the resources we talk about on our website, which is propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor.com.au.
APRA intervention. I said no. Kate said no. Dave?
I said yes, if rates don't rise significantly.
Yeah. And that was a good disclaimer there because APRA certainly haven't needed to do anything.
No.
Because the RBA has done all the heavy lifting by increasing interest rates significantly.
Well, look, I thought they'd have to step in the way the market had gone the previous 12 to 18 months if rates didn't do the job for rate rises didn't do the job for them. But I think, you know, as you've talked to already today, Pete, I think government will continue to search for ways to intervene in the market to supply more properties for renters, to keep rental prices, try to manufacture a way to keep rental prices lower, and or throw more money at first-time buyers, which we know pushes up prices, but it gives the governments a sugar hit to see first-time buyers as a growing percentage of home buyers in the property market. So I think we'll see government intervention, but not APRA intervention.
No, yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
Kate, did you want to add anything there?
No, not at all. Ditto, Dave. Okay. It's spot on.
Developers and building. So I predicted 2022 would continue to be a tough time to find a tradie or a builder, and some builders would go under due to cash flow issues brought on by supply. Kate, builders and materials will remain in tight supply. Renovation and build costs will continue to influence upsizes to sell, or buy as opposed to renovate. And Kate was also worried about developers and builders with fixed price contracts. Yes, big fear. And Dave, builders will continue to be very expensive due to the overhang of the home builder continuing and supply chains not untangling as many thought or hope. Yeah, that certainly has been a very interesting space the first 6 months. Very interesting indeed. What do you think is going to happen for the next 6 months, Dave? Do you think the situation will get better, worse, or stay the same?
And we've seen each other's answers pretty similar to both of you. Costs are going to stay high. I think they're going to stay high for 12 to 18 months. Gradually, activity will drop off. You know, we're already seeing it. You know, there are less people wanting to renovate, wanting to build because of this huge bottleneck period that's built up. So the high costs, as we've touched on, have been caused by supply chain issues and rising commodity prices. And then you throw into the mix the huge number of renovators that chose to do so because of the government stimulus. And that's caught, you know, that's equaled a recipe for disaster in many regards, with some builders and developers falling over because of it. So we're going to see costs stay high, but we're going to see, you know, activity, I think, gradually drop off a cliff, to be honest, over the next 12 to 18 months.
A lot of demand was brought forward by home builder. Interest rates have increased. Construction costs have increased.
Yep.
I think people are just going to sit on their hands for a while.
Yeah.
I think it'll place a lot of pressure on established property, and we'll see a real segmentation. We already are, but we haven't seen it quite roll out. You know, obviously our fears in relation to all of this have become a bit of a reality watching it all play out. I'm now seeing land banking vendors, so aka builders and developers, reselling with plans and permits. You never see that happen. They always actualise their gain and enjoy the build. It's just not happening. When you do get a nice new build, and I've seen a few around here in Yarraville, I go up each morning for a walk, get a beautiful new townhouse with the right floor plan, right orientation. One that I spotted yesterday, the board went up yesterday. I saw a sold sticker on it today. So obviously that was a very fast deal. The negotiations were well underway before the board was even sourced, but it's few and far between. So it really is pushing buyers towards established or completed new. And I think that will be our real challenge, and it will probably last for quite a bit longer.
Very good. All right, the big one. What did we think was going to happen to interest rates? Well, I got that perfectly wrong because I said the cash rate would stay the same. Kate said there would be no change unless the US inflation became a consistent concern, and it did become a consistent concern. Dave said it would remain at the same level or a rate rise of 0.25% in the second half of the year. But Dave also said fixed rates would continue to increase further, and they have increased significantly. Yeah. I've never seen them increase so much in such a short period of time. And Dave also said that the US would increase 3 or more times, and that would put pressure on rate increases on countries like Australia and the Aussie dollar. Well, I got that perfectly wrong, but you two got part of it right. So well done, you two.
My learning here is I got everything right except Australia's rates going up, but everything else I said, they were going to happen, it would mean Australian rates would go up. And I think I was looking a bit glass half full, you know, not wanting that to happen, probably to curtail the property market or something like that. So my lesson is to follow my instinct and not let the rose-coloured glasses tinge what I think would happen because,
In fairness to you, though, and let's be honest, not laying blame, I wouldn't want to be the governor right now, but we were emphatically told many times over there will not be any rate rises this year. And I think we all kind of banked it. You know, we look at these people and we listen to what they're saying. We read the minutes and we think they're quite impressive. No one has a crystal ball. Things did change. What was really interesting was you taking us through the differential between the fixed rates and the variable rates and what drives fixed rates and understanding how our nation's strategy around bond buying changed and how that directly impacted the cost of fixed rates. And, you know, for anyone who's wanting to predict rates, I wouldn't bother trying to predict variable rates, but I certainly think we've got some strong insight when it comes to fixed rates.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, as soon as they turned off the tap for the TFF, the something funding facility that they're providing to the banks, can't remember what the T stands for, and they guaranteed at 0.1%, which was for a three-year bond, as soon as they turned that off at end of July 1, you knew that the cost of fixed rates were going to start going up for the banks. And so that was the peak time to be fixing for a longer period of time. And, you know, we obviously talked about that a couple of few times on the podcast. And, yeah, we've really seen the fixed rates fly since then, haven't we?
And out of the majors, CBA stands out, where they've increased their three-year and fixed-year rates, whether it's interest only or principal and interest, have increased by around 3%
already
in 6 months. That's just phenomenal.
That's an increase of about 4.5% or so from when we first started talking about how fixed rates were going to rise, which was around June, July last year.
Very significant. So what's your prediction for the cash rate by the end of the year, Kate? Do you want to make one?
Not really.
Okay. Dave, you want to make one?
Look, I'll say around 2 to 2.5. I hope it's closer to 2 than 2.5, but I'm concerned it might be closer to 2.5.
Yeah, well, I'm saying it'll be closer to 2.5 by the end of the year.
Yeah.
ANZ said it would be over 3%. By the end of the year.
That's just come out since the unemployment rate came out at 3.5.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, but we know what else ANZ have. We've seen all kinds of claims from ANZ, in fact, all of them.
Well, we have, haven't we? They love to get the headlines.
Yeah, but they get it wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're happy to change their predictions every month or so.
Yeah, when the facts change, so does their forecast.
Yeah.
That's a great disclaimer. I love that one. All right, rents and vacancy rates, particularly important to investors. I said rents to continue to increase and vacancy rates to stay extremely low. Kate said higher rents and tighter vacancy rates everywhere. Dave said rents increasing at a more stable pace but above average. Increasing investor purchases will put downward pressure on this gradually over the year. And policy intervention, but the return of international migration and overseas students to more historical numbers will offset this. So basically, we all said that rents would continue to increase and vacancy rates would continue to decrease. I reckon we're going to see more of the same between now and the end of the year. I can't see rental increases slowing down, nor vacancy rates increasing. What do you reckon, Dave?
Yeah, look, I think they're already historically low, significantly low. I can't see them getting much lower, but I think they're going to stay around the same level. Yeah, because we're just not getting the international migration happening fast enough, and that's going, you know, we're seeing that because with our unemployment rate.
Yeah, yeah. Apparently they're not processing visas fast enough. And I said to a friend of mine, why don't they just employ more people to process the visas?
Yeah.
Well, with the low unemployment, there is no more people to employ.
Yeah, that's a big story. It's in the Fin every few days, how slowly they're processing visas.
Nightmare.
So, Kate, did you want to say anything about rents and vacancy rates before we move on to the next topic?
I think we've got a lot of pain to go for renters, which is awful. But, you know, we had APRA just squeezing the life out of investors and credit policy grinding investment purchasing to a halt. And now we're all standing around scratching our heads saying, oh, my gosh, what went wrong? Well, we've closed out so many investors. And investors during the pandemic, particularly in the lockdown cities, were impacted by eviction moratoriums and vacancies. You know, they got jack of it or they were forced to sell. So we lost a lot of investors. You know, I think there's a lot of pain to go until this changes. And I just don't think that we've got the resources to turn this around without further incentivising investors, to be honest. So it's for that reason, I don't think APRA is going to tinker with any credit policy on locking out investors for a long time.
No, agreed. Okay, next one, sales volumes. What did we think was going to happen to the number of properties that were sold in 2022? I said they would remain high, but it wouldn't be a record year like 2021. Kate said predicted lower sales volumes, and Dave also said it would reduce but stay above the average sales volume for the last 3 to 5 years. So we all got that one correct, because 2021 was a record year.
Yeah.
It'd be pretty phenomenal if 2022 was going to continue in the same vein, especially as interest rates were increasing. What do we see happening to sales volumes for the remainder of the year, Dave?
For me, I think just the trend is already happening there. It's lower, but it's closer and more around the average of the last 5 years. So I think it'll stay that way.
Kate, what do you reckon?
I think we'll see them further diminish, Pete. I think stock will become an issue that could drive prices. It'll certainly put a floor under prices falling. The reason why we're seeing diminished sales results is threefold. last year, you know, COVID had really shaken everyone up. It had changed the way that we looked at life, what we wanted out of life, what we needed in a home, you know, study areas, all the rest of it. People were moving to adjust to their new lifestyle. And with that, you know, we were seeing any vendor who purchased, they were creating the next transaction and so forth. Now we've got, you know, people have broadly settled down. Sadly, a lot of our sales last year were a result of relationship breakdowns. You know, it really stress tested a lot of relationships by locking people away for months on end together. And also we've got vendors looking around going, well, I don't want to sell in this climate. And if I do sell, what am I going to buy? So you get that awful chicken and egg situation where someone isn't prepared to sell unless they can see a pathway to buying, and they don't want to sell first if they think the market's falling. So I think that we're going to see lower stock volumes over the next few months.
Right. Very good. Dave, anything else to add there?
No, nothing for me.
Okay. So the next one is risk. We've only got a few minutes to go. Risk which could impact the market at the beginning of the year. Dave, mate, your crystal ball must work better than most of ours.
It was good.
Russia invading Ukraine, Dave says. Aussie increasing rates early. Share market falling in the US and Australia. Supply chains not freeing up as easily as some believe they will. New COVID strains, and COVID still not becoming something we can live with easily and freely. Inflation becoming endemic. That crystal ball of yours is pretty good.
Yeah, I'm not liking it.
Well, look, I hadn't said this on the podcast, but it's what I've thought a long time with the supply chains and therefore inflation as well, is I don't think these things are as easy to unwind as people thought initially. There's so many different moving parts, nations, businesses, commodities. You can't just flick a switch and unwind those things. So I was pretty sure they'd last. You know, if we bring it all back down to our own situation, I know all the moving pieces, I just run a business with 20 people. You know, there's a lot of moving pieces. You know, in our own family households, we feel like at times there's lots of moving pieces. I just, across supply chains, you know, across the world, I just didn't think they would be able to flick the switch like everyone sort of half hoped, I think, once COVID restrictions ended. Unfortunately, I still think there's a bit of concern there as well, because the geopolitical instability and the decoupling of supply chains now, and sort of trying to have less, remove manufacturing, less reliance on China for manufacturing. And yeah, you know, I was listening to a Nobel Prize winner who has some, I guess, left of center views on what shapes economies. And he was talking about potentially the last couple of decades of low inflation has been because we've had China manufacturing so many goods at such a low price. And as we decouple from China, well, naturally the cost of manufacturing goods is going to get higher. So potentially inflation is going to stay higher for longer. And, you know, there's a lot of logic to that. Yeah, anyway, back to the predictions. That's what I thought. And I think there's still quite a bit of risk there. And as I touched on earlier, just because we're raising interest rates, that doesn't necessarily cause Putin to, you know, end the war
right.
with Ukraine and or choose to, you know, turn on Nord Stream, which to flow the gas into Europe, or, you know, so we'll see.
And Kate, your crystal ball's not too bad either. Supply chain shocks with essentials, another nastier COVID strain, Delta, builders with fixed price contracts going into receivership, US hiking up interest rates. That's pretty good, Kate.
We had some awful writing on the wall, and yeah, I think we were dreading it, but we knew that 2022 was going to be a different year, didn't we?
I said that there would be a tightening of lending, which has come about because of an increase in interest rate, not that APRA's done anything. But yes, 2022 has certainly been a very interesting year, which has obviously been impacted by COVID and all of its consequences, and also the Ukraine-Russian conflict. All right, the last prediction is inflation. So this is the talk of the town at the moment. Dave, you said, I think inflation will creep up higher than expected and last longer than we expect. Well, you got that one right. And what do you think is going to happen going into the last 6 months, Dave?
Well, I think it's still going to be an issue come the end of the year. I hope it started to turn there are some early signals around the world that some of commodity prices and other causes of inflation are starting to plateau. But to be honest, I couldn't say with any conviction one way or another right now.
So you're not willing to pick a number?
What will it be at the end of the year in Australia? Look, it's going to go up. It's going to get close to other Western nations that are ahead of us because, like what happens with the flow of values in capital cities, the larger nations, it then flows down to the smaller nations. So I would say, you know, it's going to be up around, it's going to hit sevens, maybe eights. Yeah.
Okay. Kate, what do you think is going to happen to inflation for the remainder of the year?
Look, I don't disagree with Dave. What I really hope happens is that our policymakers and people that are watching all this stuff are looking at Aussie spending behaviours outside of the cost of fuel at the Bowser and, you know, the cost of broccoli and meat at the shops.
Because lettuce.
They're the things that are outside of our control. They're not because Aussies are being whimsical with their purses. They're because we've got supply chain issues creating that. So I think what we have to look at is where we're travelling to, how often we're travelling, what we're spending on travel, and whether we're purchasing secondary personal use property, so holiday houses, luxury cars, all the stuff that's discretion. We will also see that, you know, at the tills with all of our spending money on presents as we get closer to Christmas, we'll see our retailers bleating about people spending less. So they're the measures that we have to pay attention to, because if Aussies are spending less on stuff, on fun stuff domestically, well, that's already a sign that what they're trying to initiate is working. I really hope they look at the right measures.
So what's this space? I agree with you, Dave. I reckon inflation will go around 7% by the end of the year, but I think the rate of inflation will start to slow, certainly influenced by the significant increases in interest rates that we've had over the last 3 months and we will continue to have over the next few months. All right, please don't go away, listeners. We have our gold nuggets to wrap up the show.
If you've enjoyed our podcast, leave a review on iTunes and share the episode with your friends.
Now it's time for us to go mining for our gold nugget property tip of the day.
Kate, what's your gold nugget?
Well, my gold nugget is for everyone that's sitting out there pondering a property purchase and wondering if they can try and time it. Everyone wants to time it. I wrote a little blog on the weekend. I'll share it in the show notes, and it got a little bit of attention. And it's all about the fact that timing the market and picking the bottom is pretty hard to do. You know, we can look at market drivers and we can look at some of the things, the leading indicators that tell us that conditions are changing. But this is a difficult one to navigate because we haven't seen colossal falls or crazy movement. It's not actually been a volatile chart. It's been reasonably static. The question I have for people who are looking at doing that is ask yourself, could this be it? Because if we have 1 month where our RBA doesn't move rates, or if we have any clear decisions or statements out there to suggest that the rate of increasing is slowing and that we've maybe got close to that equilibrium, we will see people flood back. So ask yourself, when are you going to jump in before the flood comes back?
Yeah.
Okay, excellent.
And will you be ready? Or then will you take 3 to 4 months to get ready and another 2 months to buy and it's already moved?
Thanks for that gold nugget, Kate. What about your gold nugget, Dave?
Look, my gold nugget is, remember, property is a long-term investment and 10 years in property is short-term, 20 years is mid-term, 30 years is long-term. All our discussions about the economy and predictions are interesting and a bit of fun, but in reality, if you're in it for the long term and you have a plan and you're able to hold, you're thinking of your future property decisions when you make your current one, then where you buy at the market cycle matters less. Just quickly, you know, in terms of I got a bit lucky on in some of my predictions, if I was going to put that down to anything, it would be I read for probably at least 1 to 2 hours every day on the economy, politics, etc. And ultimately, my opinion is the combination of a lot of other people's opinions and my perspective. And you get a feel and a sense for what's going to happen, which opinions you should take heed of, which opinions are perhaps biased. Then you make up your own mind. That's the amount of time I invest in trying to understand all these things. And I find it pretty interesting.
Excellent. Mate, you do a lot of homework there. Well done. Well done. So, look, just before we go and Kate shuts us down, Dave, did you predict that Ireland was going to beat New Zealand in the rugby?
No way. I'm married to a Kiwi, as you know, Pete, so there's no way I'd predict that out loud.
I am sending you guys 3 cat memes a day for the next week.
All right, listeners, Kate and Dave, thank you very much for your time this week. Yeah, we got some of our predictions right, some of our predictions wrong. It'll be a very interesting 6 months coming up, but you don't have to wait that long to listen to us again. We'll be with you again next week. Bye for now.
See you later.
See you then. Bye.
Hi there, it's Anne-Marie from Property Planning Australia here. If you've enjoyed this episode and would like to learn more about some of the topics discussed, take a listen to episodes number 19, Time in the Market versus Timing the Market. Episode 137, Predictions for 2022 and a look in the rearview mirror at 2021. Episode 155, Plotting Australian Property Market Movements from 1970 to Now. The impacts of recessions, inflation, financial deregulation, population growth, unemployment rates, and analysing what could disrupt the drivers of price increases. Episode 158, How Interest Rate Cycles Have Impacted the Property Market Since 1990, when the RBA first started targeting the cash rate, and some predictions on what will happen this time. And episode 160, Top Tips for Purchasing in a Cooling Market. Listener question.
Thank you for joining the property planner, David Johnston, whose company Property Planning Australia provides the only independent pure planning advisory in Australia that does not buy or sell property, insurance, investment or super product.
And the property buyer, Kate Bakos, recently awarded Buyer's Agent of the Year and an owner of an independent buyer's agency in Melbourne's Inner West. And of course, the property professor, Peter Kalizos, Australia's leading property university lecturer, chairman of Property Investment Professionals of Australia and seasoned investor and developer.
We've really enjoyed delivering this podcast and we'd love you to join us on our podcast webpage at propertyplannerbuyerandprofessor.com.au or our Facebook page. Feel free to send us any questions and Dave, Pete and I will answer them for you.
So until next time, remember that each property decision you make is leading you towards your ideal lifestyle.
Everything we talk about in this episode is general in nature and should not be considered to be financial advice. We've put a lot of effort into making sure the information is accurate, but please don't rely on this information to make a decision. If you're looking for specific advice, please seek the help of a specialist, and remember, it's important you determine your trusted advisors are independent.